Good morning. This is Focus 580, our morning talk show, hour two of the program. My name is David Inge. Glad to have you with us. The producers for the show, Harriet Williamson, Martha Deal, Jason Croft is at the controls. In this hour of the program, you will have the opportunity to talk with another candidate in next month's election. Something that we for a long time now have tried to do is to invite candidates in on the program to give potential voters the opportunity to talk with them and ask questions about, you know, whatever issues are more important, most important to you. And the guest this morning in this hour is Mike Frericks. He is a Democratic candidate for the Illinois State Senate in the 52nd Legislative District. This is almost all of Vermilion County, the eastern half of Champaign County, and does include Champaign-Urbana, Rantoul, and Danville. And this is a seat that's now held by a Republican, Rick Winkle. He's retiring, so it's now an open seat, and there are three candidates in the race. We will have all of them here on the program on Focus 580, give each of them the same opportunity and give you the opportunity to ask questions. And also, I do want to mention that all three candidates, Mike Frericks, Judy Myers, who is the Republican, and Joe Peronoskis, who is the candidate of the Socialist Equality Party, all three of them will be making a joint appearance together on Friday night of this week on our companion station WILL television at 8:30. This is an hour-long program. John Paul will be the moderator. So this, again, will be an opportunity for folks who live in this district to see and to hear from the candidates. I have some questions that I can ask, but most important here, it's the opportunity for people who are listening to ask questions. So if you'd like to talk with our guest, Mike Frericks, the number is 333-9455. We do also have a toll-free line that's good anywhere that you can hear us. That is 800-222-9455. So at any point here, you can give us a call. He currently serves as the Champaign County Auditor, and has been since 2002. Before that, before serving as county auditor, he was twice elected to the Champaign County Board. He grew up and continues to live in rural Gifford, and we're pleased to have him here. Thanks very much.
David, thanks very much for putting us on. I was listening to your program on the way here. Your last guest was very interesting, maybe interesting for me. I hope your guests don't find this to be too boring.
Well, we'll see what sort of questions are on the mind of people who are listening. Let me just pick an issue to start with, one of those that you are, I know, are interested in, and something that has been, as long as I can remember, an issue that candidates have talked about, and that's education funding. Yep. And the need that many people feel to move away from the property tax, the local property tax, as the prime way of supporting schools. And as I say, you know, as long as I can remember, I've had people on the show, people who are either in the General Assembly or people who are running, who said, this is a good idea. We should do this. That is, move away from property tax, go to income tax, and provide some kind of offset so that people don't end up actually paying more taxes. And it seems that this is one of these things that everybody's for, but doesn't seem politically doable. I know you're for it.
Yes.
How do you actually get this through the General Assembly?
Well, I think in this race, for people who are concerned about this, there's only one candidate who's come out in favor of this. And it's not just one candidate. It's not just a few individuals. This is something that in 2004, a broad coalition of groups got behind. There were the teachers groups, which is no surprise, but the Farm Bureau got behind it. There were business groups in the Chicago area that realized our current system for funding education is woefully inadequate and creates huge disparities. Illinois has the greatest disparities in its school districts of any state in the union. Sorry about that. I need to turn my phone off.
It's okay.
has some of the greatest disparities of any state in the country. And it's something that needs to be addressed. And I think it can be addressed. I think there was broad support. I think there were enough votes in the legislature in 2004 to pass it out of the House and Senate. Unfortunately, the governor had threatened to veto the legislation if it passed. And that would require 3/5 to override. And that support wasn't there. So I think what we need to do is we need to have legislators who are, one, committed to fixing this problem. If anyone tells you it can't be fixed, I'll guarantee you, you elect that legislator, it won't be fixed. If anyone who gives up on it before it starts, you're not going to solve the problem. But I think it's a question of education, educating the governor about how fundamentally wrong this is. In Illinois, we have separate school districts, more school districts than any other state in the union, and unfortunately, they're vastly unequal. It's a moral question we need to address. Mm.
Well, let me ask you this question, because I think that what I think people say is that the idea of more money going to schools, they support that idea. And the idea of paying perhaps higher income tax to support the schools, okay, they're pretty much okay with that, as long as you get the offset on the property tax. And I think that one of the reasons that more people don't support this is that people are afraid that that's not going to happen, that the offset's not going to work somehow, and that they're, at the end of the day, they're actually going to end up paying more tax because they won't get the break on the property tax. Can you really assure them that the swap is going to work the way that you and other people would say that it would work?
You can't assure that everyone will end up paying less. But I think this was a concern for Senator Winkle when he was working very diligently on this 2 years ago. He realized some of these concerns, and part of the legislation that he supported, Senate Bill 755, had guaranteed rebates to property owners. And so the state can't really control what local taxing bodies do, but they can look at your tax, the property tax you pay, and refund that amount to you. Now people will say to me, what's to keep that taxing body from going ahead and raising my taxes afterwards? I said, well, there's not very much to keep them from doing that. But I asked the question back, what's to keep that taxing body from raising your taxes right now? And the answer is the same, not very much. So I go out throughout the district, and I have yet to find a person who enjoys paying taxes, who wants to pay more. But when asked about which taxes they like more than others, the tax they feel is most unfair, the one that's at the bottom of the list, is the property tax. Other states have seen this. They've made the changes. And it's something I think Illinois needs to do.
Can you assure voters that what will happen is, suppose this happens, we increase the income tax and we take that money and we put it into education. Can you assure voters that then the General Assembly, that will actually mean more money for schools, and the General Assembly won't turn around and then take more money out, so that in fact what the state's kicking in is not more, it's just that it's coming from a different pocket.
I'm imagining there are people out there right now thinking about the lottery. They felt that when the lottery was passed nearly 30 years ago, it was supposed to solve all our problems with education. And where did that money go? I get asked frequently when I go out knocking on doors, people say, well, wasn't the lottery supposed to take care of education? Well, that money does go towards education funding. But the problem is, as you just outlined, less money was going from the general fund towards education. And so couldn't this just turn into a big shell game? Yes, there is that potential. If the legislature doesn't put into the laws guarantees that the same amount of money or increasing amounts will go from the general fund currently towards education.
All right. And that is something that you would favor, that should be clearly spelled out how this should work.
Yes. And if it's not been clear enough on the air, I want to make sure people realize that I'm not pushing this forward as a shell game, as a reason to get a tax excuse, a tax increase. This is something I would fight for.
And you think that this time around there again would be enough votes in the General Assembly to pass?
I believe so, because there are a lot of groups out there really pushing behind this, and people will say, well, what about north of I-80? They don't have any interest in changing the school system. And if you live in a wealthy suburb of Chicago, your legislator probably doesn't have much interest in changing the system because it benefits you. Kids up in some of the wealthier school districts in the Chicago suburbs will receive upwards of $23,000 a year per student. In your listening area, I'm sure you have school districts that spend closer to $5,000 a year per student. And that kind of disparity, four times the resources spent on a student just because they had the misfortune of being born into a poorer area, is wrong and should be addressed. But what I tell people is it's not just north of I-80. The city schools in Chicago, the urban schools, also realize there's a problem. They are underfunded to meet their needs. And I think what we have here is the opportunity. If you can get bipartisan support, if people can put their partisanship aside and vote their economic interests of their area, I think you can have a coalition of Chicago and downstate legislators squeezing the suburbs to do the right thing.
Let's talk with some callers here. By the way, maybe I should introduce again our guest in this hour. Mike Furrichs is a Democratic candidate for the Illinois State Senate in the 52nd Legislative District. And questions are welcome. 333-9455, toll free, 800-222-9455. We have 1, 2, 3. We'll start in the take them in the order they came in, starting with line 1 in Champaign. Hello.
Hello.
Yes, go ahead.
Hi, this is Marie calling from Champaign. Mm-hmm. One of the things I haven't heard a lot about in this race yet is about the environment, and I'm very environmentally conscious and want to know what he plans to do to protect the environment and would just like to hear a little bit more about that subject.
All right. Go ahead.
Yeah, the environment is a big concern for a lot of people, especially in Champaign-Urbana when I'm talking to them. But it's more than that. You have in Vermilion County great natural resources, whether it be Kickapoo State Park, Babe Woodyard area, Kennecook County Park. It's something I'm committed to protecting. Now, I think the difference between myself and my opponent, I'm not so certain. I don't think she filled out questionnaires for the Sierra Club or for League of Conservation Voters. And when the Sierra Club sponsored a debate, she didn't show up. So all I know is what I support. One of the things I'm concerned about is land acquisition, open space. Illinois ranks near the bottom of the states of the union in terms of acreage of open space per capita. We have a fund set aside to acquire land. Unfortunately, that fund money has been siphoned off for the general fund. That's something I think we really need to restore and make sure that funds are appropriated for a certain task are actually funded.
Was something more specific that you wanted to ask about?
I would just like to see if there's any additional regulations or things that we can also do to help.
Additional regulations with regards to whom?
I don't know if there's anything else that we could do at the state level just to make sure we protect and keep our parks and environment protected against any money that's taken away that should have been appropriated for parks and for open space, as you just mentioned.
Yeah, well, that's a concern, I think, regards to budgeting. We need to make sure when we do our budgeting that all legislators have some input in the process here. And that's something I'm committed to doing. I think you need to have priorities and make sure they're funded properly, that they're funded first, that those obligations we have and those funds that are set up, we fund them first. And before we take on new spending, before we take on new programs, those obligations are met.
All right.
Thank you.
All right. Let's go to line number two. This is Urbana. Hello.
Hello. My name is Jason, and I'm a student at the U of I. And my question for Mr. Ferrix is pretty straightforward. I would like to know what you, as a state senator, will do to help the University of Illinois.
Yeah. The University of Illinois is the biggest economic engine, the biggest concern for most people in this district. It's the largest employer. And unfortunately, I don't think over the last 5 or 6 years it's received the level of support that it should. It's important for a legislator for this area, a state senator from this area, to support the U of I, not just because they have a lot of employees in the district, but as we look towards our future, we need to have a plan going forward. If we want to compete globally with other countries around the world, one of our biggest advantages with other countries, whether it be China, India, Europe, is our system of higher education. And if we're not properly funding it, we're discounting our future. So I'm committed to fighting to make sure the University of Illinois gets the resources it deserves and it needs. Unfortunately, has not received large increases over the last several years, but that's something I want to work on. I think that I can work with leadership to get something done. I think over the past, you saw legislators like Stan Weaver was able to really take care of this university because he was there for a long time. Because Stan was a good legislator that people trusted and could work with, but also he was the party in power. He was number two in the Senate. And when the U of I needed something, Stan was there to deliver for them. I would like to go off to the state Senate, be there for several years, and serve in the same mold as Stan Weaver. But I think certain things we can do are increasing money for operating money and R&D support. If we're really looking to grow the economy around here, the University of Illinois is one of the best engines. A lot of ideas that come out of research here go on to become commercialized. In years in the past, those jobs, those industries often left our state, or they go towards Chicago, they go towards the coast. But I think that the university has made a stronger commitment in terms of the research park here at the University of Illinois, and that's something I'm committed to working with.
Okay. I hope that gets at the question of the call. Let me ask you a general question. That whenever candidates come in here, people are running for office, they're talking about what it is they're going to do for their constituency. And, for example, here we're talking about, you're feeling that the university should have more state funding. There are a number of other things we could talk about that would involve spending money. candidates, they don't often seem to talk about where the revenue is going to come from to fund those programs. And nobody, it seems like nobody ever wants to talk about increasing taxes. Mm-hmm. How do you think about this, the issue of revenue and expenditures and the criticism I think that one could justly make of the General Assembly for some time now is that they're good at passing out goodies and not mm-hmm. really too concerned about where the money comes from. They don't want to raise taxes. And sooner or later, we're going to have some big bills that are going to come due.
Yeah, this was a topic of conversation when me and my opponents, were addressing the AARP in Champaign last week. Their group, rightly so, advocating for their members, were asking us would we support increases of funding for their members. And it was very easy for a legislator to go up there and say, yes, I would support that. Yes, I would support this. But all of those programs add up over time. And I got up and I said, it's easy to tell you I support this, but you need to be careful of any candidate who comes out and says, I'll increase funding for education, I'll increase funding for pensions, for health care, for your pet project, for some member initiatives, all at the same time cutting fees and taxes. If someone tells you that, you should be very leery about that candidate. I've come out in this campaign advocating the need for fundamental education funding reform and supporting the concept behind House Bill 750. Now, what House Bill 750 tried to rectify was our problem with education, but also realizing that Illinois has a structural deficit, that if you look at projected increases for pension costs, for health care costs, versus increases in natural revenue growth, Illinois is going to be in tough times for many years to come. And that's not really even keeping in consideration a lot of the debt we've accumulated over the last few years. So it's not a popular position to come out in support of, but what I support is changing the way we tax in this state that will increase revenues for those services we really desire and say we support, but at the same time doing it in a more fair way. As I said earlier, most people I talk to really despise the property tax. Mm-hmm. And I think the reason comes down to, everyone has parents, grandparents, they're approaching that age in their life where they've bought their house, they've bought their land, they plan to retire there, but they get on a fixed income, whether it be Social Security or pensions, or they're running out of their savings, and they find they've got to sell their house because they can't afford the property taxes. And that's something that's wrong. And so I think the shifting towards income tax or other taxes like that are based on the ability to pay are a fair way of funding our schools.
Well, given the fact that you've made a commitment to greater funding, state funding for schools, we do, as you point out, have some serious questions about meeting our pension obligations for state workers in the future. We have concerns about providing health care to people in the state of Illinois who are disadvantaged, and the governor has proposed this program that includes takes care of health care for all the children in the state. And there's some questions about what that's going to cost and how we're going to pay the bill. Can you really do all of that without somehow increasing the tax burden on people? And it doesn't matter sort of where that money comes from. Can you really do that without bringing in more revenue to the state?
Well, I think you do need to bring in more revenue, and that's something as part of House Bill 750. Now, that's not what's going to be passed in this next legislative session. What ultimately is passed is going to be a result of compromise, so I can't tell you exactly what it's going to look like. But it was a comprehensive approach looking to eliminate Illinois' structural deficit over time. And that's something I'm committed to. But as one of the things you also said earlier was it's really easy for legislators to pass out goodies. And whether it's the Congress, they'll call them earmarks. The state level will call them member initiatives. Sometimes they're memorandums of understanding saying you'll get your goods and you can go out and deliver for people in your community. And they are very, very effective. I've gone out and I've talked to people who said, your opponent got us money for our fire truck, or your opponent got us money for this. And I've heard my opponent refer to it as, that's money I got for them. It's all taxpayer money. And I just don't think that legislators are the best people to determine how that money is spent, because they have an interest in maximizing votes. What I think we should do is do away with member initiatives. We should properly fund our departments, and there should be objective guidelines whereby people and groups apply for money. That fire district may want a new fire truck, but I think there should be objective standards other than just whether or not a legislator wants to give it to them or not, or feels that it will buy them enough votes objective standards whereby they apply to the state, and we take the politics out of it, or attempt to take the politics out of it. You're never going to take it completely out.
Well, if just to not to put too fine a point on it, but if you could do those things, all these things that you would like to do, does that really mean that that people are going to see their tax bill go up?
I think it will depend. If you are a senior citizen living on a fixed income and have large property, you'll probably see your overall tax burden decrease. You'll see a rebate for your property taxes, and since you're not bringing in that much money, you won't see a great increase in income taxes. Now, if you are an individual, a high-income household, renting property, or renting an apartment, yeah, you'll probably see your taxes increased. But I think that's a fair way of taxing people who have income. It's based on your ability to pay. If you don't have income, you don't have to pay. But if you have some, we take it out of your paychecks, and it's a much more comfortable way of paying. I think one of the biggest problems with the property tax bill is that it comes once a year. You pay it in two installments, and those big checks you write really hurt.
All right. Well, let's talk with some more folks here. Champagne's next, line three. Hello.
Hi. I was very interested in hearing what your plans are for promoting economic growth and bringing jobs to our area.
Okay. Well, that's something that I could talk about for a while. We only have an hour on this program. But if you're interested in looking at more detail, on my website at mikeforex.com, you can find my economic development plan. A few key parts of that are, one, realizing that one of the largest factors in economic development in attracting and retaining companies in this area is your education system. So my economic development or my economic development plan, a large component of that is my education plan. We need to properly fund our schools. We need to properly fund our institutions of higher education. I think a lot of skills that employers are looking for in their employees, a lot of them have come out of or can come out of our community college system, whether it be Parkland College or Danville Area Community College, have been very good in the past about training people for skills. But I also think we need to be looking more towards the future. I think too often we look at the past and say, oh, gee, it was really great back then. How do we get that back? Or we look and say, oh, boy, can we just get anyone coming in here? And I think the state of Illinois needs to be smarter about its tax incentives and needs to look at companies and industries that have a great potential for growth, but also industries where we have a competitive advantage. So part of my economic development plan is wisely targeting our incentives towards industries and companies in four key areas. One of those being biofuels. I see energy as a field for potential growth, great potential growth in this country. And I look around our state and what advantages do we have? We have some of the best, most fertile, productive soil in the country. So if we can switch towards biofuels, something like ethanol in the short term, transitional biofuel, but there are other crops being grown out there, research being done at the U of I with miscanthus, switchgrass, other crops that I think have greater potential. In the long run, energy independence should be a top priority for this country. I don't think this administration is very interested in that, and that's why I think the state should take the lead. I can get into more detail about that later if someone has an interest, but also things like clean coal technology are related in for energy. Clean coal is something that the state really needs to be pursuing because we have more coal under our soil in Illinois than any other state in the country. The problem is it burns high BTU power, but it burns very dirty. If we can have new technologies, something like the Future Gen project, if we can show that there's great promise there in sequestering carbon underground and other pollutants, I think you'll see a big boom in economic development in Illinois. But other things, I think we need to look at the University of Illinois and where are we leading the way. We're leading the country in terms of informatics and data warehousing. I see as a number of people getting on the internet and other companies are using the World Wide Web. There's a lot of information out there that needs to be successfully managed. The U of I is working on that, and I would think that as companies form in this industry, they would look to be close to some of this research. And if you look at the former Air Force Base in Rantoul or a lot of the industrial sites in Danville, I think we have great land buildings for warehousing some of this stuff. And finally, my fourth area I'd like to concentrate on is we have a great history of manufacturing in Vermilion County. We've had General Motors, Hyster, other companies that have left this area. Now, I think it's very tough to compete with Mexico, China, and India for some of the lower-skilled manufacturing jobs out there. But if you look at nanomanufacturing, I see great growth potential there. I think it requires high skill levels, something that we can compete with, and we need to properly fund our community college systems to make sure they're training workers in these fields. And I think that companies and industries they grow will want to be located around here.
We're at our midpoint. We have some other callers, and we'll take as many as we can this morning here in this part of Focus 580. The guest is Mike Frericks. He is a Democratic candidate for the Illinois State Senate from the 52nd State Legislative District. And again, if you're not sure if you're in that district or not, what we're talking about here is the eastern half of Champaign County, almost all of Vermilion County. And this does indeed include the cities of Champaign-Urbana, Rantoul, and Danville. This is an open seat. Rick Winkle, Republican, holds it now, but he's retiring. So there are three candidates, a Republican, a Democrat, and someone from the Socialist Equality Party. And all of them, Mike, here this morning, and on future shows, Judy Myers and Joe Paranoskis, they will all be here on this program. So you'll have the same opportunity to talk with them as you're doing here this morning with Mike Frericks. And also, I want to mention again that this Friday night at 8:30, as part of our election coverage on our companion station, WILL Television, all three candidates will be appearing together on a program. John Paul will be the moderator. So again, that's this Friday night, the 20th, at 8:30 in the evening on WILL Television. Let us continue. We have other callers. Next up, I believe, would be Champaign Line 1, right here. Hello.
Yes. Good morning.
Mm-hmm.
I have a comment and a question. My comment is that Mr. Frericks is extremely articulate and very clear in what he would do, and I suppose that's why Judy Myers keeps having TV commercials where she is trying to run down Blagojevich and tie Mr. Frericks to Blagojevich because she can't seem to find anything negative to say about Mr. Frericks himself. So I think that's very poor judgment on her part, and I do usually agree with Mr. Frericks. My question is, I had foresight to both get a University of Illinois pension and a Social Security pension, and somehow it has to do with how Illinois structures its pensions, but I lose, 60% of my Social Security because I have both a state pension and Social Security. Now, I know that my sister-in-law, who lives in Texas, is going to get her total Social Security and her pension from the state of Texas. So I'm wondering, there are some states where you get both and some states like Illinois where you get only one full and 40% of another. And I wonder if this is something that can be corrected by the General Assembly.
Well, I would have to say this is a concern I've heard from a lot of people as I've gone out knocking on doors over the last 8 months. However, when I've looked into this, I've been told that this is something the federal government needs to address. And I don't know if it's because Illinois and the university system entered this agreement many years ago. I don't know if it's something reversible, but it is a big concern for a lot of people. What I also hear from concerns a lot of people is, sure, you're getting that 100% of your pension from the University of Illinois, and that's great. My guess that had a large role in deciding where you wanted to work and how long you'd be there. You were promised a stable, guaranteed, defined benefit pension plan when you started working. Now, that's something that the Illinois legislature can work with and really should do a better job of funding. Now, neither party has been good about properly funding our pension system. We've gotten to the point where we are one of the worst-funded large public pension systems in the country. That doesn't happen overnight. Back in the early 90s, I think we're as low as 48% funded. We're still well below the 100% funding we should be working towards. And that's something that I've promised support for, that I will not vote for any budget that doesn't include proper funding of our annual required contribution to our pension system. It's something I serve as the Champaign County Auditor As a county auditor, I've been the authorized agent for IMRF. Now, I don't manage the pension funds for the county. The Illinois Municipal Retirement Fund does, but I see the way that they manage their system. And they have an annual required contribution. You have to make that contribution. Unfortunately, a state legislature can take holidays or pay less than they're supposed to in the pension system. And I look at it the same way people get into problems with credit card debt. Any number of companies out there will offer you a credit card, and you probably get several solicitations a week. You get your bill every month, and you can choose to pay all that off, or you can make the minimum monthly payment. But next month, you have your new charges, plus the old charge you didn't pay for, plus interest. And it grows to a point where it gets very difficult to get out of credit card debt. I think the state of Illinois is running a risk, the same sort of risk. So I think we need to be adequately paying all our pension contributions. And if there is a possibility for the General Assembly to change this format, so that people who work and pay into Social Security but then also have a state or university pension system can receive both the pensions that they've worked for. But as my understanding and speaking to other people, this is something the federal government needs to address.
Thank you.
All right. Thanks for the call. You said, I just want to follow up on this, you said that you, if I heard you right, you said you wouldn't vote for any budget that did not include proper funding for the pensions for state workers. Now, when you say proper funding, what does that mean? Does that mean 100% funding?
Well, we're not going to get 100% funded of our total liabilities next year. The price tag is way too high. I think, and my numbers could be off here, it's somewhere around $60 billion projected in liabilities. Now, we don't need that money tomorrow because those liabilities are calculated based on actuarial assumptions that say at some point down the road, perhaps someone like David here may be expecting to draw a pension someday, but he's also not looking to retire tomorrow or the year after that. But we can guess, actuaries can, about how long he'll live, about what age he'll retire, what his salary may be at that time, and you can make actuaries can make a very good guess how much money needs to be set aside by the time he retires in order to properly fund his pension, his defined benefit pension. Now, we need to work towards 100% funding. That is what IMRF works off of. Currently, I think we're somewhere around 60%. But there was a law passed in 1995. The Illinois General Assembly realized that, well, hey, we'd been very bad for many years. Our pensions were poorly underfunded. We need to start working to get them funded. Now, legislation they passed in 95 said that our goal is to be 90% funded within 50 years. Now, don't pat yourself too hard on the back for saying that we'll spread it out over 50 years. I think the state probably needs to ramp that up. There were changes made to the pension systems in the 2 years ago that have changed those projected deficits and liabilities, and they've changed the schedule. But there is a schedule out there that we need to follow. And actually, as a certified public finance officer, this is something I've spoken with the Government Finance Officers Association, their top leadership about. They're located in Chicago, and quite frankly, they feel a little sense of shame that the organization in this country dedicated to proper financial management of governments is located in a state with the worst managed pension system or the worst funded pension system in the country. So I look forward to working with them, convincing my fellow legislators of the need to address this issue. And I think the best way to explain to people, it's like credit card debt. If you only make the minimum monthly payments, at some point in the future, you're going to be bankrupt.
We have other callers here. Let's talk next with someone in Whiteheath, line two. Hello.
Yeah, Mr. Frerich?
Yes.
I have actually two questions, and both of them have to do with property tax assessment and the hypocrisy that's involved with it. One of them is the issue of, and I'd like to find out your stand on it, the issue of the Department of Revenue threatening to assess woodlands at a 33 1/3 percentage point, which then would put it up to the same assessment as a regular homestead or a house, whereas up until now they were assessed as farmland. Now, my hypocrisy question is there, on the federal government and the natural resources area, we have spent literally millions upon millions of dollars to create more woodlands and set-aside land. And here on the local level, we are trying to assess the properties in the woodlands so high that the individuals are going to have to go back and cut down those timbers and do other things with it in order to make it qualify for farmland again. That's my one question. The other one is in terms of energy resources and creation of natural resources is essentially the same hypocrisy is involved. Take, for instance, a solar system that you would like to put on your roof. The local assessor comes along and says, oh, this is just wonderful. I would assess that at one-third of its value, and now from there on in, you pay for the rest of its existence the real estate taxes on that assessment. And the same goes, of course, with windmills and any other source. And I have friends who would like to put up windmills or wind generators, but the figures in Illinois do not come out. And that includes, for instance, the rebate that you get from the power companies. Out east in several states, there are quotations where the power companies reimburse the local generator the same amount as they would pay from any other source, whereas in Illinois you only get pennies for per kilowatt. In other words, a very small fraction. And then, of course, when you add the real estate tax that the tower will be assessed on, it makes it essentially prohibitive to put up individual windmills to create energy individually. So I think it is either a ploy by the monopoly to keep that resource, or it's just enormous hypocrisy whereby we're always saying, well, we need regeneration, natural regeneration of energy, but really we would like to keep the money locally on the state level. Could you give me your opinion on that, please?
Okay, I'll try and give you my opinions on that. This is something – very good question. This is something the Soil and Water Conservation District in Champaign County contacted me about last fall, I believe, realizing that the exemptions for the lower rate for wooded areas was about to be expire and was going to go up. They contacted me. I contacted my friends in the General Assembly, and I believe they extended the time that these rates are going, the property tax rates are going to be lower. I don't know how long they did, but I think that was a good thing. As I said earlier today, open spaces are something the state of Illinois should make a priority, should be working to make sure we have open spaces. But you're right. At the same time, we say we want to have increased revenue, so we're going to increase the assessments on these wooded areas. That provides an incentive for landowners to cut down those trees, to take it out of production, or take it out of open space and put it into production so that they can pay those property taxes. And I think that's something that's wrong, and I think the current system of having wooded areas taxed at a lower rate than lands in production is good and something I would support extending. You talk about energy and conservation. I think there are a couple of different issues there. One is having exemptions in property tax law for energy producers, whether that be solar panels or wind turbines, as you said, to not increase the taxes, because when you put it in, it's great. You're paying less in energy, but if you're paying more in property taxes, they might offset and provide a disincentive to do something that really is good for our state and good for the environment. So I would support exemptions for additions to property that are energy producers. I think there would be a lot of reluctance to do that because I think the energy companies in this state really aren't interested in people generating their own electricity. They, I believe, want to be the providers for everyone out there, and it seems like they want to be able to charge them whatever they want. I'm surprised no callers have called in yet about electric rates, because that's something I've heard a lot when I've been out knocking on doors recently. You know, I think it's just I understand we need long-term answers to our energy problems in this state, to our energy rates, but 30 to 40% increases in a year are just too much for a lot of homeowners. And I really fear the consequences of seniors on fixed incomes turning down the heat in their houses this winter, trying to save a little money, and putting themselves and their lives and health at risk. So I've been supportive of increasing the freeze on rates, at least for another year and possibly 3 years. I'd like to see the General Assembly deal with this soon before they go into effect in January. But another part of that is other states do have good ideas. If you generate your own electricity, perhaps you generate more than you need in your house, they have the ability to sell back to the power companies to put on the grid. And I think in Illinois that rate is too low. It's a disincentive. And I think that's something that the General Assembly should work to change.
Well, I appreciate your answer, and it's very straightforward. But it also falls into place with your stand on the income tax issue, because if you were to take and leave the woodlands alone, number one, the people that presently have woodlots are paying real estate tax regardless at what rate, without having or appreciating any income. Now, when the woodlot matures and some timber can be sold, then, of course, the individual could pay his fair share to the system by paying the income tax on it. So I really believe that the conflict between the Conservation Department and the federal government trying to create more conservation areas is a very, very difficult issue to resolve right now. And I think if you get to be elected, you should really work hard on that one. Thank you very much.
Right. Thank you for your question.
Just to go back to the issue of the utility deregulation legislation and what happened. Back in 1997, the legislature passed this deregulation legislation. And what we were all told was that the result would be it would open up the market. There would be all of this possibility for competition among providers of power, and that that would be good for consumers because that competition would mean lower rates. And also, at the same time, there was this cap put on the rates for utilities that was going to be on there for 10 years. Mm-hmm. I guess the assumption was in 10 years, things would be very different. Well, now the 10 years is almost up. The cap's due to come off. There seemed to be interest in the legislature in maintaining the cap, which is sort of a no-brainer right before an election. Mm-hmm. The question, I think, though, that needs to be asked is that is there something that the legislature could have done or should have done to foster this promised competition, which and now in 10 years hasn't materialized?
Yeah, I think there was a real problem with the legislation 10 years ago. And some people say, well, that rate freeze is the problem. If we didn't have the rate freeze and rates had gone up, other companies would be looking at Illinois as a bonanza. They would come in here. There'd be huge competition. And ultimately, prices would go down. We've seen that in some other industries when we had deregulation. However, that's one school of thought. I tend to believe that there are certain industries out there that are natural monopolies that it's just very difficult for competition, or you'll find a period of competition where rates go down and one company beats other companies up. They go out of business and you end up with a monopoly. And so I think that 10 years ago, the plan to move towards deregulation was the wrong one. It was one my opponent voted for when she was in the state Senate, and now she's come out and saying that, well, it didn't work out. We need to continue the rate freeze. I think we need to rethink deregulation. There are some people who say that deregulation, and this is largely funded by the power company, says were the cause of California's blackouts. I think there was another big problem there was power companies, I'll call them energy companies, they were really just greedy companies, were manipulating markets in California and caused problems there. Companies that eventually gone out of business and hurt a lot of their shareholders who were counting on Exxon to help fund their retirement.
So, well, is there something specifically the legislature could do, you think, to actually foster that kind of competition that would then result in better rates for a consumer?
I think if you increased rates 40-50%, you'd see a lot of companies with interest in competing in this market. But I think that's going to hurt a lot of consumers in the state of Illinois, and I don't think that we should put that burden on their backs in order to get competition here. But what I fear is you look at the deregulation of the telephone industry. AT&T was broken up. It was split up into a bunch of different companies. We saw a decrease in rates in the late 90s. It was just really, really cheap to make phone calls. Part of that problem, or the reason that happened, was a boom in the stock market. And there was just a lot of money out there to invest, and people were investing in telecommunications. They saw great potential in it. But now you're approaching the later half of the first decade in the 2000s, and I think what you see is a consolidation of telephone companies and rates going back up again. You know, AT&T might have been broken up, but it's back as SBC back as AT&T now. It's come back. And so I think there are things the state could do that would encourage competition. Might lower rates, but I don't think they're going to lower them from where they are right now. But I think they would lower them from the highs it would take to get companies in here. But I think ultimately you would see a move towards consolidation, the mergers and monopolization, and a need for the legislature to step in again to regulate.
So you think that the whole concept behind deregulation was flawed?
I think the concept behind deregulation of the power industry was flawed. I think there are certain industries that makes more sense. I think with something like the airline industry, when we had deregulation, I think it has been good, although you could also argue that with these several airlines declaring bankruptcy, forfeiting on their pensions, that wasn't really good in the long term.
Yeah. All right, let's talk with some other folks here. Let's go to line number one. in Urbana. Hello.
Hello.
Yes.
Would you be in favor of election reform?
Yes.
And would you comment on what you see as most needed reforms?
Okay. Most needed? In Illinois, I think there is a need for many election reforms. You know, if you look at neighboring states such as Iowa, Wisconsin, I think they have a long history of good government reforms, bipartisanship, or at least better than Illinois. And the biggest thing is corruption. I mean, really, Illinois is a leader in the Midwest in terms of corruption. And I've talked with various people about what's the root cause of that. Some people say it all has to do with Chicago and their culture of corruption up there bleeds down to Springfield. But I think a lot of it has to do with the way we fund and run our campaigns and how we elect our legislators. Right now, we've got a system in place that encourages power in our legislative leaders. Basically, a lot of legislators feel they don't have much say in the budget process. But so if you're a group out there that's looking to contribute to legislators or an individual, if you're looking to get something from the state, you can give to individual legislators or you can give to a legislative leader to get something done. That legislative leader is much more able to stop legislation or push something through than an individual. So money flows to legislative leaders. Legislative leaders then distribute that money, and they feel like they can get something in return for that. I think that system perpetuates itself because the more power they get, the more money flows to them. We need to break that up. I think back before the last the cutback amendment that Lieutenant Governor Quinn sponsored, we had proportional representation here in Illinois. And that seemed to produce a system whereby legislators from both parties would more frequently work together along more along terms of geographic lines rather than partisan lines. I think that was better for Illinois. I would like to see a return to that. But another thing is I go out and I talk to a lot of people who have concerns about choices on the ballot. They feel like, boy, I just don't really have many good choices out there. I wish there were more. Well, our current system of electing people really sort of encourages this. We also we believe in democracy. In democracy, the majority should rule. But when you have 3, 4, or 5 candidates in a race, you can often have someone who wins who only receives a plurality, not a majority. So I think one election reform we can have in the state that encourages more competition, more, a broader range of ideas, is something like instant runoff voting so that you can go in and cast vote for the person you like best. You don't have to do a calculation in your head. Well, is this a wasted vote? Is the person who ultimately wins going to be the person least aligned with me? You get to cast the vote for the person you like best. But if that person doesn't finish in the top two in the first round of voting, you get to cast a second vote or a third vote. And basically what that produces is you can have a variety of candidates, but you have an assurance that on election day you have someone elected with a majority of the vote.
In Illinois, there are no limits on how much you can give to a candidate.
Correct.
You think there
we
should
sort of
be?
We're sort of the wild, wild west of campaign finance reform. I've had several friends tell me, I said, well, boy, I've been doing very well in my job. I'd like to contribute to you, but surely you have limits. And I tell them, no, you don't. And they're not just limits on how much you can give, but who can give. Anyone, any individual, any group, any organization. I would like to see some sort of limits. I don't think there is much support for that in the General Assembly. And I think the next best thing is full and timely disclosure. Sure, not every individual is going to go out and check where candidates get their money from. But if we make it public, the media, which should be a watchdog of this, has access to it and can report if they feel that a candidate is getting too much from one industry, too much from one individual, and might be compromised. So I would support more timely and detailed disclosure.
I'm trying to get one more, at least someone on the campus, line 2. Hello.
Hi. I know you addressed pensions a little bit, but I don't know if you have talked about a solution. I read an article a couple months ago that in the year 2008 there's going to be call for a constitutional convention, and that could change the terms of our the pension obligations, and that scares the hell out of me.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's something I've heard from a lot of people who say, well, what's going to happen with my pensions? We're not properly funding it. Now, some people will tell you that the pension benefits are guaranteed. The state constitution says there shall be no reduction in pension benefits for employees. So that, but if we continue to underfund it, it's going to create three choices. down the road. One choice is going to be at some point in the future, we dramatically raise taxes. That's one that doesn't seem to have an awful lot of support from your average voter. We could dramatically curtail spending. Now, when you talk about specifics of areas that get cut, especially something like education, you don't seem to have a lot of support for that. Or the third option is you can have a constitutional convention and change the Constitution to reduce benefits. And that's where I think a lot of concern and worry comes from people. And that's why I think it's very important to go and work with your fellow legislators and convince them of the need to properly fund our pensions now so you don't get to that crisis point. I don't think there are a lot of people who want to do this, but I think there are some people who look and say, boy, we can't dramatically change the pension benefits for our state's employees unless there's a crisis. I think it's the same thing at the federal level. I think our federal government is deliberately running up debts. Grover Norquist calls this starving of the beast. And it's not until you create a huge crisis with the Social Security system will the federal government be able to change Social Security. It's an effectively, efficiently run system that makes sense. But unfortunately, there are people who would like to line the pockets of investors or who feel that we shouldn't have the safety net for people. And I'm afraid the pension level of the state, there may be some people who have the same thought.
We're going to have to stop there. I'm sorry, one caller we cannot take, but we're at the end of the time. Our guest this morning, Mike Frakes, is Democratic candidate for the Illinois State Senate in the 52nd District. There are also two other candidates in the race, Republican Judy Myers and Joe Peronoskis. He's the candidate of the Socialist Equality Party, and both of them will be on the show in the weeks to come between now and the election, so you'll have the opportunity to hear from them. And if you tune in to our companion station, WILL-TV, this Friday night, the 20th, at 8:30, all three candidates will be appearing together on a program moderated by John Paul. So you'll have the opportunity again to hear more from them and see them. Our guest this morning, again, Mike Frakes. He is a Democratic candidate for the Illinois State Senate. He also currently serves as the Champaign County Auditor and has since 2002. Thanks very much.
David, thank you very much for the opportunity to come speak today.